Clubhouse.
This is Caroline.
And this is Mike. Welcome to Stitchin' and Bitchin', the Making the Cut Watch Along podcast. Tonight we're talking about episode 10, the season finale. It's called The Winner, the Next Global Brand. Dun dun dun. Caroline, we have arrived at the finish line. Are you excited?
I am excited. I feel like it came very, very fast. It's funny, last night I was going over how short a period of time it had been. And I really did not appreciate the fact that we were getting two episodes every week. It's funny, you'd said it in the last episode. And for some reason, when you said it, I was thinking, yeah, they had been saying that they could let go up to two designers an episode. And so in my brain, that's what I was thinking when you said two a time. And then I was like, no, dude, like he was talking about the fact that we got two episodes every week. Oh, Caroline, Corona brains.
But think about it, though, in 5 weeks, we really churned through a lot of content in just 5 weeks, went through a lot of contestants. The show was efficient in its presentation and the way it hacked out guests. I think I'm still sticking with the fact that I would have liked it to go on a little bit longer because I've enjoyed the ride and I want more than 5 weeks with this. So I'm hoping maybe in season two, we get it spread out a little bit more.
The word is that the format is different. And so that's exciting to me because I think that they could use a little bit of tweaking. I don't know exactly what areas that they're going to focus in on. But I'm eager because it's like we got a new show and that's exciting.
Always up for change. And, you know, you want a show to refine its premise and the way it runs and all of that. I hope it doesn't lose the things, though, that were really great about it. Meaning, I hope it doesn't lower itself to more of the lowest common denominator kind of show. You know, I don't want it to devolve into the drama. I just think back to how much we were wincing when Heidi was egging Megan on to fight for herself and throw, was it Johnny under the bus?
Yes, it was.
I did not like that. I mean, it stands out across 9 episodes, my least favorite part of the show. I don't want this to become that. And so when I hear tweaking, that makes me a little nervous. I don't want them to lose the professional aspect of it.
The areas that I feel like could be improved would be the judging situation. It just felt a little too hodgepodge. It didn't feel like an actual structured television show judging. It felt more like if you were just in a classroom and you told everyone to go like on one side of the room and the judges were going to sit on the other side. Like it was just too casual, I guess, for me. And I love as the viewer to get more feedback about what the judges are actually thinking and who, you know, they feel like needed to improve and that kind of stuff. For me, that area could use improvement. But you're right. I really enjoyed the fact that we did not go back and do like the dorm hotel life antics. That was absolutely not missed at all.
The judging itself didn't bother me as much as maybe I want more insight into the how the judges kind of approached their decisions. I feel like we had a good idea of where Tim was coming from all season because we were getting the designing under the gun segments that we were calling it in the workrooms. So I feel like we kind of understood his point of view. And if you were paying attention to the mutterings during the runway shows, maybe you were getting a point of view and some insight into the judges' minds. But I'd rather them, you know, spend more time on the runway show and on the judging and less extraneous stuff in the beginning of the episode.
It felt like very much like anything you learned about with the judging was very incidental learning. Like you just had to pick it up. You just had to overhear something. You just had to watch body language, that kind of thing, which, you know, as a viewer, you know, maybe you and I are willing to do that because we're watching this with a critical review eye. But if you're just an average viewer, you don't want to have to do that much work. You want them to just tell you what they think. You don't want to have to be like Columbo about it.
And in the same way that I kind of wanted a little bit of a learning corner, because they were dealing with some advanced designing concepts at times, you know, I wouldn't mind some education and a little bit of handholding because this is not my world. You know, I can review it critically, you know, as a television show, but I need handholding when it comes to understanding the finer points of the design industry and the business that they're talking about in the fashion business that they're talking about. So I would like a little more education stuff on that, less on learning corners for SAT kind of words that we got a couple episodes ago.
That was so funny. I like having one segment of Tim and Heidi, but you could probably drop the second segment for me. It seemed like it was like, okay, like it would seem like an interruption when it came in the second time, only just because we were like far in depth in the challenge and we were, you know, working on like, well, gosh, what's going to happen next? And then instead of getting some Tim time with critique, we were getting more Heidi and Tim a second time. One segment would be fine by me.
Yeah, especially if they're going to keep the series the same general length. I think we both agreed all season the Tim and Heidi stuff was fun, and we love Tim and Heidi, and they're definitely a draw of the show, and God knows we could use probably more Heidi, because we do get Tim throughout the episode. But if you're going to keep it to 54 minutes to 58 minutes an episode, then something has to go, because you do need to pay more attention to the other things. So either that or make it longer, like I've been saying. You know, don't be afraid. Go make it. It's a streaming channel. It's a streaming show. Make it an hour and 15 minutes. Make it an hour and 10 minutes. Make it an hour and 20 minutes. The people who are watching the show are going to stick around that extra time. And that way you can give everyone what they want without making it unbearable.
So I'm going to ask you a technical question that you may or may not know. Due to the fact that it's a streaming service, does Amazon get any type of feedback in terms of, like, if a viewer were to have fast-forwarded through a part? Like, would they be able to know if viewers, say, fast-forwarded through a Tim and Heidi segment or something like that? Is that something that you think that they are able to keep track of? Or am I just, like, crazy thinking, like, future things are looking at our everything?
They clearly know when people how long you stay with it, because that's a known analytic, even going back to, like, Netflix. Because that relates to how Netflix determines a watch. You know, if you've made it 2 minutes, Netflix considers you watched the show. And that's one of the only algorithm things that kind of Netflix has released. So I'm sure Amazon also has that. I don't know how much in-depth analytical data they have within an episode where they can key it to, you know, 90% of people watching fast-forwarded between minute 8.5 and 9.5, which happened to be the Tim and Heidi segment. I don't know that they have that. That seems like a very specific kind of analytical data that I would be surprised if they have that, but maybe they do.
If you think about the amount of time and effort that the Tim and Heidi segments really probably take, given that, you know, I mean, they showed them walking on the street. So you have to think of, like, what was all the pre-production shit of, like, closing down that street and getting the permitting and blah, 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 to have us have like 5 minutes of them. Or not even five, say 30 seconds of them walking down a street or something. I could see where that section, to me, I bet ends up not being a part of it, just because I just don't see them being able to keep that up, despite the, I know that they have a high budget and all that kind of stuff. I bet if you would look back at it, you'd be like, you know what? We had to cut the fashion show really short. And then we had to like pay for like permits, and we spent an entire day trying to film you guys, you know, getting your caricature done or whatever. You know, like, it wouldn't surprise me if that comes out to be the weaker point.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think you're right. There is definitely it probably becomes a budget issue, especially after the first season, because shows just become more expensive because you have to pay people more to do the show. You know, generally every successive year, costs of production go up. They don't go down. So something will give at some point. The question is, this is really the Tim Gunn and Heidi Klum pinnacle vanity project, right? As far as them being a duo, this is probably the peak thing that they will do together as a duo. It's curious if they'd be willing to sacrifice that extra screen time. If you take away the Tim and Heidi segments, we don't get a ton of Heidi.
Oh, no, not at all. And very little Tim, for that matter.
True, but at least we get more Tim. I mean, because you get Tim by himself with the contestants. The Heidi time that we get, if you take away the Tim and Heidi segment, is Heidi as moderator for the judges, where she's very then true. Splitting her time between three or four other people.
Very true. Well, this will be interesting. Maybe they'll just tweak that time. Like I said, maybe she'll come around and see things more, or I don't know what. Maybe there'll be a little bit more interactivity between her and the contestants at a different point. It will be interesting, Mike. I'm excited and nervous and really looking forward to seeing how this is going to suss out. We were left on a cliffhanger, which was completely unexpected, given that we knew we were going into episode 10, and we felt like that should be a full, you know, episode all by itself. How they are dragging 9 into it was quite a surprise.
And seemed kind of unnecessary. You have to imagine, as soon as we press go here, they're going to have to resolve the elimination. And if you've watched through episode 9 of this to the end of episode 9, were they worried that you weren't going to watch episode 10? Like, once you found out who was in the final, you weren't going to give a shit and watch 10? It just kind of, I don't know, it seemed like an excessive use of the cliffhanger for no real reason.
That's tricky. And that never occurred to me that they were doing that in order to force you to go to 10 to watch it. Very interesting. I did not know that, but you're probably right. I guess that was a good or an interesting manipulation of forcing you to hit play on number 10.
Right. But also fails to recognize the binge culture that just by being an Amazon show, you release the two episodes together for a reason so that you go from one to the other. I don't know. It just seemed kind of weird. You know, if you were watching these consecutively without taking a break, pausing and loading our next episode to watch along with us, which we totally appreciate you guys doing, you rolled right into 10 within seconds of the cliffhanger. So what did that really even do for you? It wasn't like it went from episode 4 cliffhanger and then you had to wait to next week to see the pickup on episode 5 where there was a week in between. This was going between episodes released at the same time. Oh, just kind of weird.
You're so right. That is so odd. Very odd. And you're right, with the binge culture and everything, cliffhangers in general are kind of silly.
Right. Especially when you've released them at the same time. You know, most people are probably watching these. Most people are probably not watching one and then the one that released at the same time the next day or at another time. They're probably sitting down and doing, you know, 2 hours of Tim and Heidi at a clip if you're watching it in generally real time. Very old school, like a very we're still on Bravo kind of maneuver. That being said, I'm very excited to get to the finale. This is a watch along podcast, and in this time of quarantine and self-isolation, when you don't necessarily have a lot of people to sit on the couch with you and watch the show along with you, that's where we come in. Caroline and Mike are dropping right into your living room all together, eating your popcorn, drinking your beer, stealing your wine. Caroline's bringing pizza. I'm eating all the pizza. So what happens is I'm going to count down and I'm going to say, make it work. When I say work, everyone presses play. We should all be at 00 right at the beginning of the episode. Once we hit play, we will be all synced up and you'll hear all live commentary, just as if we were there with you on the couch talking during the episode.
I'm very excited. Let's do this.
All right. Episode 10, the winner, the next global brand, picking up on a cliffhanger. Let's go. Make it work. One last time, we get the Amazon original smile.
I'm so excited for this episode. I feel like it's so, like, been such a build-up to watch all these. I think back to Martha.
Oh. Our first complaint of the season, Martha.
Oh, my gosh.
So we have to recap a little bit here, the pop-up. But though we're not doing a previously, we're actually picking up kind of where the episode left off a couple moments before. The pop-ups, I mean, what an interesting way for a final challenge to play out. And they all seem to do a good job in different ways. You know, really not a lot of bashing from the judges during the episode on any of their pop-ups, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that none of them, I think, should be slammed for it. I think that they all really tried and they all had different approaches. And I think that they were successful in their own little ways, you know, and I don't know how exactly you put this against each other, because it's a little like artwork, you know. It's hard to say, well, this one's the best and this one's second and this one's third. That's a little hard to do when people are coming at it from different ways. Do you like Esther's attitude that she just wishes all three of them would move forward?
I kind of do. If you're going to give us the cliffhanger, that's about the only reason that I wouldn't have minded the cliffhanger, was because it turned out that they were going to pull all three of them through.
I agree with you. And you know what? It didn't exactly occur to me that he would do that. But perhaps that's something that could have happened. Do you think that this is a good use of their judging time to actually ask them to explain their pop-up? Or should it just be like, look, I experienced your pop-up, so that should be it?
I think it's fine to do. I think it's weird that we're getting this in the finale episode that's only an hour and 1 minute long, that we're really still continuing episode 9, which makes me feel maybe that we are going to just pull them all through. I don't know. This is a very weird use of time if they are really going to eliminate someone here.
I agree with you very much.
You know, I literally just said before we started recording, they're going to have to send whoever they're eliminating home right away so you can get into the finale. This is cutting in major time if they're going to go through all three of them.
And to go through basically what we just did with them, because, I mean, we did follow the judges around and we did get an opportunity to get a feel, as much of a feel as we ever got. Like, this amount of judging where they're giving any amount of real, true commentary never happened through the season. So, yeah. You know, we had already gotten our feel for it. with them walking around, and they showed us when they were going to go back to the group and be like, well, you know, I can remember specifically with Sander, they were like, he's kind of, you know, he's starting to show a little more maturity and stuff like that. So it was like we were getting as much of a glimpse as we've ever gotten during the pop-up. So I don't know what this part exactly is.
Yeah, though I'm a Johnny fan, and so I'm actually really enjoying everything they're saying to him. So, you know, I'm also kind of in, you know, this is an odd use of time, but also enjoying it. You know, Kiara's, you're just effortlessly cool. You're making clothes that people want, which is what, you know, we've been saying all along. Naomi giving him high praise that he did a good job and praising him for not going and doing something that he wasn't, which is something that you and I discussed. You know, we were a little worried about, you know, the dress that you said you saw at Target 3 years ago. You know, that was a slam on him earlier in the season, but he's getting a little bit of praise for it.
Yeah, that's a Massimo dress that I definitely 100% know already.
You mean a Johnny Cota dress? Yes.
No, I mean, it's a Massimo dress. yeah, it came from another time and place.
All right. So we're getting there. Now we're going to start the Sander boss, who, again, very popular pop-up, you know, but did go really young in his design and in his aesthetic of his pop-up, you know, with the psychedelic colors. I think you called it iridescent, which is a very good term.
I really like that he's explaining the tailoring. I think that this part was something that was very smart. And I think that it really is like more fashion forward. It's what people want. And that's something that we need to do, is to have the option to be able to adjust clothing more personally to people. A big thing, Mike, that you may or may not know that went on for a couple of years, although it really did not pick up, was that you could actually take your measurements, or you can go into specific stores. Like you could go and I want to say Buckle or Levi stores, and they would measure you, and then they would send you a custom made pair of jeans because everyone wants that. But it didn't really pick up. Like, I had a gift certificate to go do it, and I never really even did it, which is terrible. And it just didn't really pick up. It was kind of awkward the way that you had to like go find a store that could actually do it. And this idea of like having little shops being able to just answer your need right away feels like, yes.
Interesting, though. He's not getting the wild praise that, like, I think Johnny just got, though. They're complimenting him on the idea of the tailoring. But, you know, Altazora is talking about here how you look like you were tailoring kind of T-shirts, and also talking about the online experience. Naomi was talking about the youngness of his collection, which he did the little like me, which is super annoying. But here it didn't get the good reaction that he's gotten previously. And I'm glad that they took him down a peg, and they said that you're a little too unpredictable. And for online shopping, you need to be a little more predictable.
I hear what they're saying very much about the idea of like tailoring a T-shirt. I think that was such a smart comment, because it's not like his items were so high end. I mean, they were still just mini T-shirt dresses. So the idea of that being super fitted isn't exactly relevant, you know?
Yeah. So you were a little concerned, I think, about Esther's pop-up and the judges because of all the blackness and how that doesn't maybe reflect so well online, and then the heavy aesthetic of the rope and stuff. But I think you did like the jewelry. I that was my recollection. You liked the way she put it out there.
I liked that she did it because I felt like it's so her. I mean, like when you're looking at her, the first thing you and I commented on probably 100 times in different episodes is, oh my gosh, look at all her jewelry. Oh my gosh, she swims with her jewelry on, like all that stuff. So I appreciated that she went through the trouble of designing jewelry, because I think that was huge for her. That's really her. I also didn't mind the black ropes and stuff. I just thought that there could have been something a little bit more going on than that. You know, given that everyone else had like full walls and full everything, I kind of thought that it was a little, I don't know, not quite enough.
Yeah, it's interesting. She's, you know, getting good praise, and, you know, especially Heidi and Naomi were, you know, we loved the shop. We felt like we understood. We were in your world. Joseph giving her compliments about the genius of the aesthetic, but also then saying, listen, again, all the black. Like, you can have black central to your identity without everything actually being black. And she's talking about how she tried, you know, she's taken the lessons about color, but in the end, it's maybe just not who she is. I don't know. It's interesting. Her explanation was interesting. It seemed very vulnerable.
I agree with you on that. Vulnerable does feel right. She is such a softer Esther at this point that I just feel like what they're saying to her right now, that it's like, you know, if you're going to stick with this one niche thing, then you have to decide how big you want to be. And her response to this, I feel like her heart just feels so much more like exposed and vulnerable and all the words you use that I feel like she's grown so much. Sanders is becoming increasingly annoying and weird with his mannerisms here.
Well, maybe just immature. I feel like the immaturity is what's really being exposed about him in not a good way.
Agreed. So every which way he moves his body bothers me.
Yes, I agree with you. So they are making a cut. Johnny winning with the winner. Oh, yay. I'm going to clap with that. Because I said along, of these three, he's the only one I feel like his store is the store I could go in and find and understand what I was seeing and actually have a shopping experience that didn't make me scratch my head. And also feel like it was clothes that I would be able to go understand and buy.
Absolutely. That asymmetrical black dress is something I would absolutely purchase. I mean, that could go for anyone's figure because, you know, it's basically like a cool, sassy slip, but you're covered down to your arms. I mean, you really, there's that awesome mix of modesty and sassiness that's the kind of stuff I dig. All right. So, Esther and Sander.
So we talked about how the world was not big enough for an Esther and Sander final. Mm-hmm. And this seems to be bearing out. They're just too much. You needed a Johnny with one of them. I'm really thinking of Esther. I just don't think Sander is what this competition is about.
Yeah. I think you're dead on. yeah. You know what? He's so young. He has plenty of you know, world ahead of him. It's just not his time. You know, he just needs to go and figure out more things to kind of grow and learn from.
Well,
like Heidi's outfit, P.S.
Yeah, girl. The evolution of Heidi. We've talked about that, too, how she just kind of gets more hot every episode.
I don't know how she does it.
I mean, she's you know, maybe it's Maybelline. I don't even know. But my concern about Sander in the end of the day and the way it relates to this conversation is not that he can't design. I think he makes amazing clothes. I think he has a real identity. But I don't think he makes accessible clothes. And I think it disdains him to make accessible clothes. He voluntarily thumbed his nose, especially in these later episodes, the idea of having to make something, which is the whole point of the show. That you know, an Iowan mom can walk into a store and enjoy and understand something from the Sandra Boss collection. That's just not where he's at. And maybe it's a maturity thing, but he's kind of got open disdain for the idea of what this show is trying to do, I think.
And so. he's got arrogance for days. So I feel like that, though, that this has, you know, been a bump for him. But I mean, at least if you want to listen to his words, he seems to think he's the bee's knees. And so I don't think he's going to feel like he has any issue at all.
No. And honestly, I he could go be a tremendously successful designer, making very bespoke clothing, very high end, very avant-garde, very haute couture. That's his style. That's where he lives and probably wins the competition if this was that competition. But this is not that competition, you know?
Heidi is super duper tan too. That's the other thing I would like to comment on Heidi. Her legs were super tan.
You were talking about, I wanted to go back because I skipped over it, but that black slit dress that Johnny made, we got to see that on one of the customers in the episode, and it looked fantastic. It hung in all the ways you'd want it to hang. So
yeah, it was a really hot dress. I liked it. And I liked it too because it's easy. Like, there are women who would be able to put on like a pair of Converse sneakers and wear that out and be completely comfortable. And then there's other women who could like slap on their most strappy heels and, you know, be all done up and take it anywhere. Like, that's a very versatile dress.
Thank you.
Okay, so this situation here where they're like hanging out on the top of this building, They're on the rooftop. They're building their little fashion show runway. What do you think about this? Do you think coming back to New York was the right move for the show in terms of like big, big, big climax here?
100%. It had to, well, we talked about it and, you know, I said it had to come back to the States. It had to come back to the States at least for, well, they'll be pitching to the president of Amazon Fashion. That's pretty amazing. And we saw Christine Beauchamp in the pop-up shops. She was around, you know, which was amazing that she was already getting a feel for what these guys looked like in a store setting and what their clothes look like. So, you know, she's already got an idea, you know, Christine does. So that's interesting. Anyway, I had to come back to the States because that's going to be the biggest, I think, market for these clothes from an Amazon standpoint. These are going to be mostly Americans that are going to be buying these clothes. And so I felt like it had to come back to the States. I didn't know that it was going to come back to New York necessarily, maybe San Francisco or LA. But New York feels right to me. You know, it started here really quickly, and then before they went to Paris. And New York is New York. It's a fashion hub.
So the fact that the pitch is going to be such an important part, I mean, Heidi is really pounding it in. Like, this is a really important part of the actual challenge here that we're giving you at the very end. I am interested to see that the way that they've edited this, only Esther has expressed concern or, you know, any amount of like, you know, being a little bit worried or anything about the pitch. And I don't see anything about that with Johnny. I think he's going to show up and show out.
I mean, from the last episode, when we saw how they were working on their collections in isolation for the month, just showing us the studio room that Johnny has and the people working for him, Johnny has an operation. He has a full-blown design studio operation, which tells me he has to have a decent or at least familial experience with running a business, with doing what they're asking him to do. They're just asking him to do it on a much grander scale. You know, experience-wise, I feel like Johnny has the leg up here. She may make the higher end fashion. She may make the more daring, interesting fashion. But I think he makes the most accessible, ready-to-go fashion and knows how to do it.
And like mass production, look at this, the dress that he is just working with on the model there, on the mannequin, mm-hmm. with the kind of like netted sleeves and the hood. I mean, yep. Goddamn, I would buy that dress. My friend has a hoodie that I borrow with that one. That's like the netted sleeves and the hood. I love it. I love, love, love it. And this is something that I would absolutely be purchasing. Esther's stuff with all those really intricate, and again, for lack of better word, I think it's like a lacing almost. It's a version of lace where you like cut out the leather and sort of mm-hmm. make that like lattice look. I wonder about that for mass production. I wonder how Amazon will look at that and feel about doing that. And the cutlery thing, Mike, I don't get it. I don't get it. It's the one big misstep for Esther to me that I'm like, girl, that is just so polarizing. Like, people are either going to say like, yes, I want to have knives and forks and spoons on my clothes. Or they're going to say, hell no, I don't want that on my clothes. And there's like no in between in my brain.
There is really no gray area. When you do branding like that, you are pitching, you are swinging for the fences. So you're only getting the extremes, love it or hate it. There's very, very few. Well, I see what you're doing there. It may not work for me, but we're already up to the model fitting. It's so interesting. I feel like we're so far ahead in the episode, even though the episode feels like it really just started.
Ooh. I think because of the way that they did the whole pop-up show and the fact that all their clothes were already completely ready to go, that's different than every other design show. Normally, they're doing the finishes right up until the very last second of going into the fashion show. But in this case, the drop-dead date was the pop-up. So they already had that. Now, this is just really specific fittings on making sure they pick the right outfit for the right girl. But that's a very different look, you know, very different assignment to have at this last moment.
What do we think of these yellow canary thigh-high boots?
Well, I like them with the sweater. I think that those are one of those, like how we were saying about wear it once and maybe not so much. I could see myself wearing something like that, really fun for a specific party or something like that, but then not wanting to get rid of them, but knowing my heart of hearts, I'm very unlikely to wear them again. What I don't like at all, and I think he's going to get burned on, is the yellow gloves, because those look exactly like dishwashing gloves.
They look exactly like dishwashing gloves. I went to my kitchen while we were talking to see if he stole them.
I knew you put them on. You're sitting there wearing them, aren't you? I knew you would.
I mean, I'm in like my Dr. Frankenfurter outfit, except for their yellow and red. But let's talk really quick. Did you see that very long Morticia Adams black gown that Esther made? I thought it was very pretty, but not body size fluid at all, and maybe a little too dowdy, a little too funeral. I don't know. What did you think of it?
I don't know. Because everything's so black, to be honest with you, Mike, the details are getting lost on me, and I feel like I'm losing some of her really special moments, because when my eye just sees it, it's just like, it's like a blob of black. Now, see, when we're getting details like this, okay, so now we're seeing Esther, right? She's over on her computer. When we zoomed in there and you could see on her belt the really special little extras, the little rivets, all the things on her belt, beautiful, but it's very hard to see unless they zoom in like that.
Especially online. How often do you get a really good zoom function in an online clothing collection where you can zoom in to see all that kind of detail? Very rarely.
Yeah, it's not great. They'll try to do that on Amazon, but typically when you do actually zoom in, it's blurry. So it doesn't actually work. You know, they give you the option, but it's not very functional. You know, as much as you and I were saying that there wasn't a room for Sander and Esther, watching the two of them walk around together and realizing that they're wearing head-to-toe leather and black, these two could practically be brother and sister, Johnny and Esther.
But I think they designed very differently, though. That's where the interesting comes. I think Sander, as a person, is probably much different than Esther and Johnny, and that makes sense. But as far as design goes, I think Esther and Johnny are very different designers. I think because he doesn't just use black and hasn't for probably at this point more than half of the competition. You know, he started very much as another designer in this competition that just did black. But he quickly moved out of that and kind of evolved himself. He went maybe more simplistic, but he was more varied. So now we're with Christine Beauchamp. We're about to start the business pitch. Esther is up first. How do you think this is going to go for her? There's a language barrier maybe here. You know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch.
I'm excited that Tim was allowed to come in with her. I feel like that would probably give me a really good anchor if I were her. I feel like the way that she was taking a moment outside feels good. I feel nervous about the complete contrast between Esther herself and Christine, who is like a bright-haired, very brightly colored dress person. I feel a little nervous. I do like all the things that she's showing up here on her presentation board. That seems beautiful and like well done. Like that organization there for me, like the House of Esther, it just looks so good. Like I really get it. I really understand it well.
It's really professional looking. I'm blown away just by the general presentation of it all without even seeing the facts and figures. I've read a lot of business plans. I've drafted a fair share of them for clients over the time. It just really has a very professional, finished, experienced look about her, which that's what we want. This is what we expect from someone who's made it this far in the competition, right? So
I like how she's using this metaphor of the house and explaining that she spent too much time up on the roof in the past and not enough time down on the foundation. I like now when she's doing her explanation, how she almost looks like she's dancing. I know that kind of sounds funny, but you know, it's kind of like you do like your dog and pony show. But the way that she's moving her hands and stuff like that, to me, I actually feel like, I don't know, it on a very visceral, emotional level, like hits my heart. Like I'm like, she just seems like she's so engaged with Christine. She's listening. They are like having a true meeting of the minds here where she's explaining her whole everything. And Christine's honestly listening. Like this is like a really good, exciting meeting.
Yeah. And she's saying all the right things. She's saying, I understand I have to appeal to the masses, but you know, it's also a struggle with me with giving up my brand and trying to be true to myself. I love everything that's happening here. I love the give and take. I love how attentive Christine is. If I was going to do business with her, man, she could not give anything more than what she was giving, her full attention, taking copious notes, being just very present in the meeting.
Tim is just the best friend you could ever have your whole life, you know, like him being like, that was absolutely fabulous. You know, you did everything right. You did everything you could do. I feel so great for her having been able to do that. I was going to ask you about this. Do you feel like with Esther, they're really focusing on what I would consider very feminine moments? So meaning like focusing on all this emotion, I don't know how to explain it, but then with Johnny, it's like, you're strong, you're tough, you're a fighter. And it's like a very different masculine edit. I can't really explain it to you better than that right now. It's like when you look at a newborn baby and they tell you, is it a boy or a girl? And then you use attributes to describe them based on whether they tell you it's a girl or a boy. That's my study from back at Applied Learning Development. People always use words like strong, fighter, blah, blah, for a boy. And then they use words for girls like, oh, you were soft. You were, she used the word feminine and all this stuff. This is very interesting. So I don't know. The edit is creeping on me here.
Yeah, definitely. That's what they're giving him now. I mean, I think modern femininity or it came up at the very top of Esther's pitch. But I feel like they've spent a lot of time making Johnny a very not necessarily masculine, but like a very, you know, not afraid to cry. You know, he's got his family, he's got his husband, he's got his weak points. But as far as contrast to this episode, I mean, just the outfit he's wearing, it's definitely a very masculine versus feminine edit in their presentation. Though off the bat, Esther, much more polished presentation than Johnny. Johnny is coming off much more from the hip. You know, he started off with a bunch of ums, which I'm doing right now, but then he really broke the ice with Christine, who kind of cocked her head like a dog who didn't like the sound it heard. And then he mentioned making circus performer outfits. And I feel like that really kind of broke the ice. It really brought her to him in a way. So now he just has to keep her.
I like that she questioned exactly what we questioned. She was like, tell me about this ballet situation. Like, I was not familiar with what you're doing there. Now, he really just kind of like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, just sort of skimmed over it. Like, he's like, oh, ballet's a bunch of really small family-owned businesses. What you and I saw looked far more akin to a sweatshop than a small family-owned business. So I'm a little like cockeyed about like, And he presented that like, oh, it's just like a mom and a dad and a daughter. Like, they're just sitting here helping me sew.
Interesting that I agree with you. I mean, SoCal, California is kind of a wild place as far as what do you mean by a family? How many people mixed up that family and what? Show me their ownership papers. Interesting how he really gave a verbal presentation that was very dialogue-based. Whereas Esther gave a very visual presentation with I think, extremely effective PowerPoint slides and the house metaphor that really reinforced the words that she was saying. So if you were not inclined to listen to Johnny and you were just, you know, your mind was wandering, you missed whatever he had to say. Whereas I felt like Esther, I think she gave the better pitch. I feel like she reinforced everything she was saying with her word as well as her presentation.
I agree with you. I liked her presentation in terms of giving that metaphor and giving all those visuals. I think that for me made a lot of sense that she understood the structure of business and how she needed to go about growing it. For Johnny though, I'm wondering if the lack of that kind of stuff really ends up coming off more like someone who's had a ton more experience. So there's no reason for me to explain to you, you know, the foundation of my business exactly, because that's sort of the thing you do when this is a brand new business. But right. He's been doing this for so long, he's coming in more like, this is an established business. I'm not going to explain to you what the foundations of it look. I mean, that's the history of it, but that's not what's happening now. And right. So, you know, let's move on. And so to me, he just, in the end, I'm not even saying I liked it better, but my initial response is just that it came off like a guy who's been in business for a lot longer.
True. I could see that. I could see that. You know, for Johnny, this is very much, don't put on the gloves, Johnny. For Johnny, this is very much what startup businesses go through, where they've got a business, they've been running it, they've been doing it. Now they're entertaining investors coming in to take the company public or give a giant infusion of capital. Whereas Esther is, I have this brand, I make these clothes, but I'm still very much starting up, you know, and want your money to help me make this dream a reality. If Johnny didn't win this competition, I think Johnny Coda's brand would continue the way the way SkinGraft has continued for 15 years.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. This would be an infusion of money, an investment of money into his business. But there's no part of it that is going to make or break his business in terms of like, he's not going to continue, you know, running a store. I think he absolutely will.
Interesting that the pan across the New York skyline there allowed them to catch the H&M tower that is part of New York skyline in Midtown now. Because as far as I know, they don't have an H&M tie-in with this show, but I feel like they do with Project Runway.
So it actually would make a lot of sense if they did. Good eye there, Mike. Good eye.
I mean, of all the things you could scan in New York skyline-wise, it seems like a very deliberate thing to pull the H&M tower into your shot. I don't know. Little subliminal advertising there or courting. Who knows?
Certainly worked for you.
I love New York skyline. So I'm always trying to pay attention to it.
It looked beautiful when they just did that sweep over it. I mean, it looked beautiful. And to have that big lit up, you know, rooftop runway. I mean, it's exciting. And everything. Okay, Mike, hold up here. They are showing Esther with tears rolling down her face. Do not tell me that these edits are not being made in a way to make her look very soft and sensitive and him look like this fighter. These edits are being done deliberate. Heidi's dress is insane. I know you're going to love it because those boobs look insane, but her
breasts are literally their own character on the runway right now.
I don't even know how they did that, to be honest with you, because there's other dresses where she looks so sleek, you know, her boobs don't look so gigantic, but this is nuts.
I'm not complaining, but it is Esther's friends look like, I don't know. They look like they just came out of a Parisian cafe of deep thought philosophers. Are you having, we saw Juwan and Sabado a little bit ago, and now we're getting some more pictures of other contestants from the season. Is this producing any nostalgia for you? Any, oh, Sabado, oh, Juwan, what happened to you? How'd you flame out before?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. Because, you know, I'm glad that they're here. I always liked that part of the show in other, in like Project Runway, when they get to lend their two cents, because I feel like they get it. Mike, this dress is insane. It's falling off of her. Her bra strap is like completely out there in a way that it's not supposed to be. It's falling off of her. This dress is ridiculous.
It is, and it's so high cut too. If she goes to sit down at that thing, we will see her vagina.
Oh my god, Mike! Oh god, we're seeing her inner thigh there. That does not even look good. Like, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, there is nothing. There is very little left to the imagination here.
Oh my god, I wonder if. Oh god, I want an explanation here. I want to know who put this dress on her and why. This is nuts.
Everyone has done their very best. Are you digging Nicole's dress and her makeup are all very matchy-matchy? I don't know why that's
her look. That's her thing. She does that very sleek where she very commonly pulls her hair back in that bun. It's really, really common for her. And then she tends to wear this kind of dewy makeup that tends to have just like this shimmer all the time. And for whatever reason, I was speaking to someone else about this recently. She has this like need with this tiny, tiny petite body to wear these really oversized dresses. It's a very Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen phenomenon. Like, uh-huh. Because you know she has a beautiful body, but look, she's covered head to toe. Like, it goes all the way up to under her chin, her collar and stuff. It's really interesting. Let's get into Johnny's fashion show here. I'm very excited.
Nicole was very part of that waif culture from 10, 15 years ago that the Olsen twins also were kind of a part of. So, you know, it's interesting how she has evolved, but also there's still that part of her that still exists. All right, let's get into Johnny's collection here. I'm gonna shut up and watch it.
I love this first outfit. I love the jacket very much. I think it's super cool. I love the lining. I wouldn't wear the pants, but I get the pants. I understand it. It's for someone else.
And it goes so well with the jacket and the crop top underneath it. That hood, though, with that jacket is fantastic.
Oh, damn. It's so aviator, which is so different than motorcycle jacket. It's like an aviator bomber jacket. Way cooler.
For sure. What do we think of the high-waisted white pants with the fringe black coming down?
The fringe is really cool. I'm really kind of actually stuck by this third outfit, though. I can't even look at the second outfit. I really don't like the turtleneck business underneath it. I did not like that. It did not work for me.
He's got this is a very monochromatic collection, which is interesting. I don't know. This is piece number four that we've said. This is the fifth piece, I think, coming down now.
I like that woven part, the macrame look over the top. That's cool.
I feel like these are all just themes on the black and white issue, especially those first four that all used the black. This black dress with the high belt, it was just all black. Interesting, the model size. It was a larger size model, very short skirt, which I thought was bold and kind of smart for him to do.
I like it. And I really like this black long dress, the flowiness with the yellow boots are kind of funny, but I really look at that dress with the open back and everything, Mike. That's a cool dress.
You know, I love an open back, but the way the boots were revealed, she pulled the slit aside and popped them out. Really, really sexy, really effective.
I don't know about yellow. I kind of wish it was red or even blue. I don't know about yellow.
Maybe on the street, but as a runway thing goes.
Yeah. Cool on that.
Yeah, kind of an explosion. Like, see, the yellow works a lot less here for me because the outfit has more color to it. I like the jacket, though. I like the boots. The boots here were a distraction for me in that outfit. Oh, I don't like the yellow gloves. I wish I lost them. Oh, my God.
So I hear exactly what Kiara is saying about this dress can be worn on many different bodies. But I'm telling you, Mike, I'm going to send you a picture of this Massimo dress from probably at least 5 years ago. And you're going to say, yeah, that's exactly the same dress. I mean, that is a look happened a while ago.
We saw that dress in the previously on wearing it on someone else, and then we saw the model fitting it for this dress. The model's boobs for that dress, and I don't mean to be crass, but the model's boobs for that dress were so perfect for the stripe across it that it elevated the dress because it fit her so well. And I think does show that it does fit a lot of different body types. I know you're saying it's a passé dress, but that is a dress that a number of women can wear.
That's the trick of those stripes, though. And that is why it's a popular idea, right? It's because, you know, it obviously highlights your boobs. All right. So let's look at this. I like that he has men going on here. I like that he's using this animal print is really exciting because it actually doesn't look like your cliche, like leopard print or whatever. Like that looked like a masculine version of it, which is very unusual.
Very. And it was masculine. And then it kind of devolved into like branding at the bottom of it. You know, it was like an evolution as your eye continued down the leopard print. The bag was kind of weird that it was being held since it had such a long strap. I wish we had seen him wearing the bag instead of just carrying it under his arm.
Mike, this is a tight show. I mean, I am seeing things with the black and white that look everything from like an African inspired to an aviator inspired to like I could be in Colorado wearing that one jacket with the high thigh-high yellow boots. That jacket could be like my Colorado jacket. I see menswear. I'm seeing, you know, a Japanese inspired with that last one kind of looks a little like kimono-ish. I mean, man, this has a lot going on. It's beautiful.
Tight collection, super sexy, really cool. Just exactly what we needed from him. That is a collection that is very much him. It is the culmination of everything I think we have learned about Johnny this season was in that collection. And I'm really, really happy for him. Really, really happy.
That looked beautiful. That's the best runway show I've seen. I've watched all the Project Runways, watched all the things. That was the best, just like tight and like, you know, being able to go from like that kind of woven macrame looking again, sort of like that natural to being able to show like a leopard print with like a tulle type of skirt. I mean, damn, you're going all over the place. And yet you tied them together. I don't really even I can't even tell you why they're so well tied together, but they really are. I got to tell you, though, that
really
wish he ditched those yellow boots. Now that I'm thinking about it, going through my brain, going through each look, think about if he had shown some really kick-ass, like, tall suede, like, all you want to do is touch that thigh part, like, boots. Fuck, that would have been so, so, so sexy. I'm really yuck on the yellow plastic.
I will tell you, there were several thighs there that I would not have minded reaching out and touching.
I didn't mean the thigh itself. I meant the actual, like, suede boot. If it would think of a super soft, suede, almost skin-color boot and how sexy that would be.
Oh, no, I hear you completely. I just want to say that Joseph Baltazora stole my line. He must have heard me because he said literally right after I did that that fashion show was really a culmination of Johnny's journey and really showed the evolution of him throughout the thing. All right, so sorry, we're up to Esther's runway show now. What do we think of this first piece here? It's a very multi-fabric kind of coat over the high black leather skirt.
So I really liked the coat. I didn't like the coat zipped up on top of the dress, but when you have the slimness of the dress, it balances out the puffiness of the skirt. I didn't like the puffiness of the jacket with the puffiness of the skirt. It just looked like someone's bloated. Like, I don't like it. But
great,
she took off the jacket.
Reveal, though.
Yeah.
Great reveal when she took the jacket off, though. The top really sold that outfit for me, I think.
Me too. So great reveal. She's really working with all this mixing of like using skin or like the lack of fabric as her color contrast, which is kind of interesting because she didn't get away from the black, but I do not like this, that third look. That just looks like a mad scientist.
But interesting though that she changed the gold collar on it, the high collar that was gold. She changed it to a black collar, metallic collar, which was an interesting spin on it. Because in a pop-up shop, that was a gold collar at the high button top. So interesting that she made that change.
What do you think about these, like, gambler poker visors that they're sporting? Oh, my, Mike.
This is the problem. This is why I was worried about a standard poker finale. Because
that skirt is unusable in the world.
This is a very runway collection that a lot of these pieces I can't see them selling in a store. This dress that's currently on the runway, I could. The long sleeved black skirt, great little fabric you want to touch. I love the pants. What a pop of color for her with this. What is that? It's a, what would you call that fabric?
It's like a plaid. It's like almost like a houndstooth, but not. Are you talking about the top?
Houndstooth. Yeah. The houndstooth pants, and now we're getting kind of a white coat compliment coming down. I love the color. I love the color splashes, and so unexpected at this point in the collection. You'd seen so much black coming down and black coming down and black coming down. Now she's kind of popped it out with now three color laden pieces or white laden.
Yeah, but Mike, this one, like, okay, so this long trench with the with the tulle or whatever over the top. I mean, it's only good in a fashion show.
Or New York in the winter. But yeah, that's
not with that tulle. Are you kidding me? Well, there's like a tulle sheer fabric over the top. That would be a nightmare. You'd feel like you're being wrapped in toilet paper.
True, but also not going to play in Des Moines. No one in Des Moines is going to go buy that coat at any time, whether with the tulle or not.
Okay, so I really like this dress that this woman's wearing in terms of, I mean, that is very, very, very wearable for lots of people. And beautiful that she chose the right model for it.
Yes, because it shows off the potential of it. I love the open back of it. I just like how it was fit. It was well-tailored. You know, we've seen a lot of people go wrong, especially with the open back dresses, because it looks so unfinished and untailored, unfitted to the model. Not tonight. All right, so we're getting a lot of utensil tops here. Interesting. What do you think? What do you think of that? If you don't focus on the fact that it's not forks and spoons.
You're right. But then terrible choice, because that's what you're so perfectly right. The actual dress itself, beautiful. The concept of having some sort of little cutouts and little silhouettes of things on it, beautiful. But what you actually chose to put on there, silly. And so for me, that's about judgment. And I'm going to give you $1 million when your judgment's like that. I don't think I am.
I like
that dress is fucking beautiful. Look at the back.
Yeah. And perfect model wearing it. I don't know. Unlike the other dress that we said that looks like it would be able to fit easily many sizes, that dress does not have that screen next to me. I liked her collection. It was a very runway collection, though. I loved Johnny's collection. His collection screams to me what this show is about.
I agree with you. That one skirt that Esther was showing there that looked like, it reminded me of the lampshades in her workspace. And I know that they're sitting here as the judges saying that there was no throwaway piece. I'm sorry, that skirt was a throwaway. There was no one is wearing that. No one is doing anything with that. Like, that's ridiculous. Check out Heidi's outfit now. Her outfit is just completely fallen off of her completely at this point.
It looks like her left breast is actually out and exposed the way it's being shot from the top.
I mean,
there.
Her skin is gorgeous and it's right. Everything is shiny and glowy, but for fuck's sake, why not just put like a, just let her wear a bra top then or something? Because like that dress is non-existent. It's bizarre.
The bra strap is actually really distracting in it too. And not in a sexual way, just in a, it doesn't look right kind of way.
No, it shouldn't be there. It's totally weird. And now she just let it fall down on both sides though. So it's just weird. Yeah.
She's probably had a bunch of wine while she was watching the show. So.
Oh, you're assuming they're drunken. That's the deal. That's why.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's a poorly bizarro dress.
I don't know. I've been on a lot of rooftops in New York City. It's hard not to drink if you're on a rooftop in New York City. They just need to go together for sure.
That's true. That's true of most rooftop life, really, right? If you get to be out there with a bunch of people, why are you not drinking? What's your problem?
I mean, so let's talk about what we think. So who do you think deserves the win based on now the pitch together with the collection that we saw come down the runway?
Okay, so I'm going to pause you for a minute because this judge's powwow, I got to pay attention to here. So okay. I really love that Christine's given her assessment of the pitches because this is the first time that we're actually getting to do that. And it sounds like you were dead on about, you know, that she was the one, Esther, to actually sit there and give the most amount of explanation. You know, the fact that she was able to do, like, she gave spreadsheets, she gave all of this information. I do think, again, it feels more like a startup than what you would do if you were already completely established. However, I'm really interested to hear what she says compared to Johnny. So,
yeah, not as strong as details. I was going to use the capital. Interesting that she talked about the modern femininity and having emotion, you know, mixed emotions about, you know, moving out of the black aspect of it. Johnny, not as prepared, not as detailed. Really interesting. Ideas, though, about global merchandising and branding and selling the product. So it comes down, Joseph's saying it perfectly here. Who do you want to give $1 million to? Who do you want to invest with?
I love, 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 love Naomi v. Yes. Heidi. I mean, the way that Heidi just tried to sum it up and be like, they can both handle it. It's a matter of taste. And Naomi's like, nope, it's not. It's a matter of the customer. Like, Naomi, goddamn, she was the best judge on here. She's the only one with the balls to speak up to Heidi and the only one to just like zing her, you know?
Right. And she's saying exactly what we've been saying. The same knock on Esther. Do you want to have to go educate your customers, you know, or like in a specialty shop like you're going to get with Esther, or into a Johnny shop where they're going to understand it and want to just go buy it?
Okay, now I'm going to say something very unflattering about old Hides. Now, this is the end of the night, assumingly they've had more to drink, but look at her little face. It is so much more worn. And this dress is doing nothing. The whole, I understand she wants to highlight her boobs, but this is silly biz.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
It looks like she's wearing like an alien costume. Yes.
Or like something from a mermaid collection or something. I don't know.
So weird.
Tim, you unbutton your jacket when you sit, Tim, because now you look kind of frumpy. Like, this actually, I was going to compliment his suit earlier. I thought it actually fit him well. Not great, but better than other suits we have seen him in this season. But now he didn't unbutton when he sat down, and so it bunches up. Very snug tailoring on Tim Gunn this year. Not a fan. I hope they fix that too.
He seems to be struggling. He seems to be struggling with his suits this entire season. I didn't like the size of his tie knot in like two challenges ago. I know the details of it all, but I didn't like it. It was too big and it looked weird and not like him. So it just felt off.
Now they said started, you know, here a few months ago in New York City. Now we know there was a month at least for them going back home and doing the work before they returned to New York. How long do you actually think it took them to shoot this whole show?
Shoot, that's a really good question.
Because usually it's not nearly as long as people think it is. It just gets promoted that way. So I'm curious how long they were in Paris. How long were they actually in Tokyo shooting? I don't know.
My guess, I will say total. Harsh, Mike, do you think I'd be off if I said in totality, including travel and including the month that they stayed at home, I'm going with like 10 weeks.
About 2.5 months?
About 2.5 months, including the month that they stayed at home. That's what I think.
I'm pretty close. I would have said a total 3 months start to finish, including the month at home.
Okay. So yeah, we're right on. All right. So now we have Esther coming up here. She's explaining this hunger for life thing. I got to say, I did not see the jacket with that big emblazoned hunger for life actually written on the back. I did not see that as part of her actual fashion show.
I didn't either. So
she
kept that down. Other than the one dress that used it on the very top that otherwise was a beautiful dress, and I don't know that I'm as bothered by it as you are, she really downplayed the utensil aspect of the branding that we saw so much of last week.
You and I talked about this, and again, like, I'm revealing a whole lot about myself in this statement, but you cannot be a woman who is not a waif and have utensils on your clothes. I feel like people don't have that kind of confidence to be able to be like, yeah, I'm 10 pounds overweight, and also I put on a shirt with spoons and shit that says, like, I just don't think it happens. I just don't. And not for adult women. Maybe that's the kind of thing you do if you're like a junior or something. But adult women, we don't reference that. It's just it's avant-garde, but it just isn't what women reference.
Right. No, I 100% agree. I mean, you're almost daring fat shaming
comment.
Your life.
Yeah, aren't you? I mean, embarrassingly so, aren't you? And it, and that's awful to say. I mean, that's not the way it should be. But there's something about wanting to look sleek that the last thing you do is talk about eating. And I don't know. Maybe that sounds so stupid. And maybe it's meant to be, you know, like a slap back at that. I don't know. But it feels like matching two things that don't go together.
Interesting, Naomi here. I don't know. I'm stuck if Naomi's asking her this question about her lack of use of color as a gotcha or to give Esther a chance to explain herself again. But I feel like we've heard the explanation so much with her about color versus the black and, you know, talking about how she can if she needed to, but if she doesn't have to, she'd rather not. And I don't know. I don't know that we're getting new ground here with the color discussion. She does black. She'll do colors if she has to. And if she does, it's white. But I don't know. Looking at her collection again, it was very asymmetrical. It was a very bold collection. Not what I would call really accessible, you know, broadband, you know, flying off the shelves, sellable, though. It just doesn't strike. It seems a little too daring for that, a little too bold, a little too asymmetrical, a little too, you have to get it. And I
agree
with
you.
My clothes.
I feel not great that the first like three or four judges, I guess it was just really Naomi and Nicole that really continued to challenge her in the same questioning. You're right. That we've had for every single one. Once we got to Kiara, she really just said, you know what? You did great. It was beautiful. And Heidi came full around and said, I'm proud of you for sticking to this because I think that you really are saying this is my look. And, you know, with so many other designers just sort of melting into one another, you really can't tell one from another. You know, good on you for wanting to stick to your look and putting out something that is more bold. Here's the thing that people may or may not put together about Heidi. Heidi adores costumes. She throws a gigantic Halloween party every year. She is known for how much she loves to dress up and have these very wild costumes. So knowing that about Heidi's personality, she's willing to step out and really wear things that are far more what most of us would consider out there. I mean, look what she's wearing now. Right. So just knowing that about her own personality and the fact that she's just known for these just really outlandish costuming tendencies, I feel like, you know, I get why she loves Esther. So let's go ahead and get into Shawnee here.
So he's talking about how the collection was, you know, meant to pull back his hard layers and show some tenderness and resilience. That was his statement. And I think there's a lot of pieces that did that. I don't know. I think Johnny needs to be careful here to not oversell what he did.
I like that.
I feel like he did such a good job. He can only hurt himself by saying too many things now.
I agree with you. I think even some of the words he's using right now are kind of bothering me that I feel like I would never say. Like he said that, you know, he's been accused of being print phobic. I don't think I would tell the judges that. I think right. I would just let my stuff like speak for itself. I love what he's saying about the neutralness and playing with, you know, the idea of like the tans and the black and the stuff like that. However, I feel like that those pops of yellow for me is where I understand those were like exciting moments. And you're right. I should just listen to you. On the runway, yellow boots are going to get my attention. That's true.
The way she pulled that skirt back when she revealed it. God damn, Caroline.
I know. It was sassy. I give you that. Would you have been as sassed if it was a red boot, like a shiny red boot?
A shiny red boot. I probably would have had to excuse myself.
Oh sure. My God. So point taken, right? There's something about yellow that is a little juvenile, right? It's very Morton Salt girl yellow boots, right?
Right. Well, are you going for sexy or are you going for shock and awe? Because yellow is shock and awe. You're not expecting that. Red is what you're expecting because it's sexy and it complements the black so well. So
absolutely.
I think I don't know that I would call his clothes. I think his collection overall was pretty, other than the butterfly top. I think it was a pretty sexy collection, but I think it was much more cool. I think it was much more just this is who I am kind of cool. And I really respect that because also at the same time, not above it all. Cool in a way that people understand, not cool in the way like you have to get the joke. Like we were talking about Sander. So
I get you. And I get that the idea of using, you know, a bright yellow is a way to really, you know, have that kind of moment of like a little whimsy, I guess, without being silly, like, you know, because that's something that Sander would do. He would end up going towards silly. This is interesting how they're talking about how they're rooting for each other in very different ways. Like Nicole Richie is really struggling about, you know, who is the one to lean into.
Right. Well, she made the comment that we did just a little while ago. You know, they both dress in black, but they're very different designers. You know, Johnny's saying, he's like, listen, that $1 million is going to work ASAP. I'm already doing this work. Your $1 million just helps me do it better and on a bigger scale. I like that Nicole, again, has this interesting take on it because she left after a while. So she has this very early idea of him as just the leather guy, she said. And you didn't see just a leather guy coming down in that collection tonight.
They've heard their pitches, Mike. Are they really not going to go back in Conflab? I mean, they're really just going to bring them back up as if those two pitches didn't even matter?
Well,
they're not going to go back and talk at all?
They had the Conflab already, I guess, didn't they? I mean, this is the part.
Yeah, but why make them explain it all?
Well, this is the part of the show where they already had. Ooh, she changed her mind. That might be the first time.
Whoa. And they're actually saying it out loud. None of this, did you change your mind? Yada, 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 yada. But the whole, say what you're going to say. All right. So Naomi says, Esther. Whoa.
Interesting.
Naomi and Heidi.
So we do have five judges. So there will not be a tie.
But their weight could not be the same, could they?
So it's going to come down. It's going to come down to either Nicole or Kiara here, because now we've got 2-1. Esther, Heidi, and Naomi, the fashion models, going for Esther. Johnny and not Johnny. Kiara and Joseph Altazora going for Johnny. Nicole back here to be the tiebreaker.
I can't believe this, but this is acting as if each judge has the same amount of weight when you know they don't.
Well, this is the House of Harlow is.
Oh shit! Look at Heidi's face. Oh, you already know it's Johnny. Look at Heidi's face when she said, "Nicole, have you changed your mind?" She says she has not. Heidi's face went like tight across. Oh, Johnny, yeah. Johnny.
I think she was pretty clear that it was Johnny. I think Nicole, she said she was rooting for each of them for different reasons. I think she identified with Johnny's collection more, and I don't think she was really hiding that. So yeah, when it came down to her, I felt like that was how it was going to break.
And yeah, I want to zoom in on Heidi's face. Her face looked like someone just like pulled a string on her mouth and it went like
not the first time that we saw that this year, Caroline. Remember when Naomi voted to keep Troy, and over the objection of Tim and Heidi, was Troy, right? And
yeah, Naomi
flexed her muscles, and Heidi's mouth went very taut.
Yes. Oh gosh.
Oh, he used a little bit of the leftover yellow leather to make his yellow kicks.
I saw that. That's funny. I love it actually when designers do that, when they actually, just sort of morph into their own designs, because on accident, it's kind of funny. Like they'll end up coming in and be like, I had extra fabric, so I made myself this shirt. And you're like, oh my gosh, now you match your whole outfit.
I really want to say it's interesting. Johnny just told Naomi, you were instrumental in this. Now, having heard her not vote for him just now, but she was the one who took him to task about his branding 3 episodes ago. And if he was still rocking skin graft, Johnny does not win tonight.
He does not. You are right.
Megan makes the finale or the top three, not Johnny. Nope. So she really was instrumental. Even in the end, she did not change her mind and ended up not voting for him. She put him on a course to make this happen.
Wow. I'm happy that Johnny won. I mean, you know, I feel like as we watched the entire competition, I don't think that there was anyone who felt as strong in terms of like actually having a business up and running and what was already going on. And somebody who felt like they had that mix of bringing cool fashion to an accessible place. Like, I want to wear everything he's putting out here. Like, there's very little things that I don't want to go buy. And that's exciting. I mean, me as a consumer, I'm like, I'm really happy I know about his brand, and I'm really happy that it's going to be sold on Amazon. I will go buy it, and I will feel like an extra special, like somehow I was part of this. Like, I watched the show. I know Johnny. Johnny knows me, you know, like as if that's the way. And, you know, I've said the entire time he's such a chameleon. I feel like because he is as a person, I think that his brand will be able to grow and change and move with the times in a way that he can be sustainable, you know?
I 100% agree. He really came to embody everything that this show was supposed to be about. And for that, I feel like he was really the one who deserved to win. That collection he put out was everything that this show about making the cut was supposed to be about. Who can make an accessible line of clothing and take it to that next level, make it a global brand? Is he the most bold designer? No. Is he the most proficient tailor and putter together of garment clothing? No. Did he have the most understandable, accessible, maybe ready-to-wear clothing? Miles ahead of everyone who went far in this competition. Miles and miles ahead.
And additionally, for me, I feel like, you know, as a woman in the world who is always looking to kind of tweak my look and look a little bit more edgy, a little bit more something. Like, I don't just want to wear like a sweatshirt and jeans or something like that. Like, I really, like, I would not do that. I don't want to do that. So right. I specifically look for something that's a little more special, has something a little more to it. And his entire collection has those little special extras, whether it be the fact that there's like leather trim or the fact that it's got a hood and a cooler cut or whatever, like all the little things that just make me be like, yes,
for people who are already cool with their fashion and take risks, not like avant-garde risks, but aren't afraid to stand out in a crowd. Johnny makes clothes for those people already. For people who want to dabble in that wilder side or cooler side or edgier side, he makes clothes that you don't feel uncomfortable going out and buying. You know, if you want to spice up your wardrobe, Johnny makes clothes for you to do that, where it's nothing like you've ever worn before, but you also understand it, you're comfortable in it. It doesn't feel like you're walking in blindfold and going to be embarrassed or uncomfortable when you walk out of the store.
And you don't feel like you're wearing a costume or like you're a poser, which is like a whole thing for me. Like, I don't want to put on something where I look like I'm dressing up to be someone else. Like, that is actually, like, an embarrassment factor for me. If I put on something that feels so not like me, I'm, like, instantly, like my first assumption is that someone's going to say, like, why are you wearing that? Like, you look like you're trying to be something you're not. And there's nothing about his clothes that would make me feel like I was trying to be something I'm not. And that was the thing with Esther's stuff that worried me a little. There were some of those things. If I come out to go shopping or whatever, even going out to a big thing, and I'm wearing that lampshade skirt.
The hoop skirt.
Everything about it is feeling like, who are you trying to be? What are you trying to do? Like, you're trying too hard. And that would bother me.
You, whatever the invitation said, you misunderstood what the invitation said the attire requirement was, if you show up in that. Right. It all comes down to what can I do with these clothes that makes me comfortable to wear them, not embarrassed to wear them. But even if you're not embarrassed to wear something that maybe a Sandra or an Esther would make, that no one's going to come up to you and say, what is that? I don't understand that. Or clothes that you have to go, like, get comfortable with. You know, you're immediately drawn to the dress, but you really need to sit with it for a while because it's got, you know, silhouettes of forks and knives on it. No real people want to have to go get comfortable with their clothing. Life is fucking hard enough. No one wants to go have to understand their clothes.
I could not agree with you more. And I think that in a time when you're right, like, if you just want to lean into a little bit more of an edgy look, a little bit more, just sort of stretch your cool factor, if you will. I mean, Johnny has offered that time and time again. And I cannot tell you how much it emboldens me to be like, I need more leather in my life. It is just a material that I feel like, yes, I feel like it's hot stuff. I love it. It never goes out of style. I think there's part of that too, that sustainability thing that he was talking about. Like, you can have leather pants from 10 years ago that are still freaking cool. You know, in fact, leather only gets cooler with time, you know, as opposed to a lot of the more, trendy is not even quite the right word, but disposable fashion where you wear it once or twice. And then, you know, that was the standard super colorful dress, like once or twice at best. And then you're just like putting it away somewhere, giving it away.
There's a reason why a Massimo dress from 3 years ago still looks good today. It's not disposable fashion. It, again, it's not bold. It may not be groundbreaking, but it works.
I'm going to send you a picture of it and you're going to laugh. I swear to God, I think I have a picture of maybe Claire Danes wearing it in my so-called life. Like, I'm serious. Like, it has been around for so long, that exact dress. It's funny.
So funny. Caroline, I have really enjoyed the season. I cannot wait to season 2. Whatever the changes are, I'm ready for it. You know, I hope we get to continue to sit on people's couches and watch along with them.
Me too. The Big Rona is going to pass someday, and I hope that the Watch Along podcast lives much past the days of Rona. So this has been a blast, Mike. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is Caroline.
This is Mike. And this has been Stitching and Bitching, the Making the Cut Watch Along podcast.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.